It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
we get general inquiries about landlord-tenant issues, foreclosures, home loans, any of the areas where a consumer may have a question. In fact, we probably get about 50,000 calls a year covering any possible topic you could imagine.
The majority of the complaints are resolved through conciliation, and we have an 80% satisfaction rate for that.
Penny Jez and Tina Holt at the Virginia Office of Consumer Affairs talk about what they do and how they can help consumers with free information and resolution of consumer complaints. And during this week's question and answer, we'll discuss wage claims and the minimum wage increase that took effect last Friday, July 24. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 54, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. The federal minimum wage increased on July 24 from $6.55 per hour to $7.25 per hour. The minimum wage law applies to almost all workers and also requires time and a half for all hours over 40 worked in a week. The increase also raises the amount of earnings automatically protected by Virginia law from wage garnishment. Starting July 24, 2009, if earnings after required withholdings for federal income tax, state income tax, Social Security tax, and Medicare tax are $290 per week or less, the earnings can't be garnished. This protection applies even after those earnings are deposited into a bank account. After-tax earnings greater than $290 per week can be garnished up to a maximum of 25% of those earnings. For 10 years between 1997 and 2007, while the federal minimum wage sat at $5.15 per hour, members of Congress voted themselves raises that increased their pay by an average of $31,600 each. Unless Congress takes additional action, no further increases in the federal minimum wage are scheduled. In other news, in a new report, the Federation for American Immigration Reform claims that Virginia's illegal immigration population costs the state's taxpayers nearly $1.7 billion per year for education, medical care, and incarceration. However, the statistic is meaningless. More than 90% of the report's costs are K-12 education expenses for the children of undocumented immigrants, and nearly three-quarters of these children are U.S.-born U.S. citizens. The report also ignores the revenue that undocumented immigrants provide federal, state, and local governments through sales, income, business, and property taxes. A study by the Commonwealth Institute found that undocumented immigrants in Virginia not only paid about $285 million in taxes, but also that employers paid about $130 million in additional taxes on their behalf. The cost estimate for undocumented immigration to Virginia taxpayers ignores the fact that undocumented workers also are taxpayers and that their U.S.-born children are not immigrants. Once these inconvenient truths are taken into account, the cost evaporates. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is security deposit. A security deposit is money a landlord collects from a tenant to pay for damages, unpaid rent, late charges, pet fees, and repairs. A security deposit can't be used for any other purpose and can't be used to pay for normal wear and tear. The security deposit may not exceed 2 months' rent. Within 5 days after you move in and within 3 days after you move out, your landlord must do an inspection and list any damages and allow you to be present if you choose. Your landlord must return your security deposit minus any deductions within 45 days after you move out. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and security deposit is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Kathleen from Richmond.
Welcome to the show, Kathleen. What question do we have this week?
If I think my employer should be paying me hourly, but they're paying me salary and I'm not getting overtime, how do I file a complaint or do I have to take them to court?
Well, Kathleen, you can do either or both, but let's talk about first whether you have a claim. If you're a salaried employee, generally the minimum wage laws don't apply to you, but you have to be a salaried professional employee, like, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, something like that. If you are, say, an administrative assistant or something of that nature, even if you are a, quote, salaried employee, you're entitled, number one, to be paid minimum wage, and number two, you're entitled to be paid time and a half for any hours worked over 40 in a week. Now, whether the overtime law does or doesn't apply to you is a kind of complicated thing, and that would best be answered by the Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor that I'll give you information on shortly. But assuming you are covered, then, as I said, first of all, you're entitled to be paid minimum wage, which goes up from $6.55 an hour to $7.25 an hour. That's as of July 24th, 2009. There are no scheduled increases after that, but that increase will take place on July the 24th. And you're entitled to be paid time and a half. What do you do if your employer is not paying you time and a half? Well, you can complain, first of all, to the U.S. Department of Labor, the Wage and Hour Division. They're located here in Richmond at 400 North 8th Street. The phone number is toll-free, 1-866-487-9243. Now, if you just have a problem with your employer not paying you on time or not paying you what you were, what you agreed to be paid, then you have two things you can do. One, you can file a claim with the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. They enforce the wage payment laws, and they're located all over the state. The local office is located at 1570 East Parham Road in Richmond. Their phone number locally is 371-3104. So you can file a wage claim with them. As you might imagine, however, they're fairly overwhelmed. So the other thing that you can do is you can file your own lawsuit by yourself on your own without an attorney, usually in the small claims division of the General District Court. You basically go down to the General District Court to file your warrant and debt, which is a civil claim for money. Make sure that it's filed in the small claims division. you pay your filing fee, or if you can't afford the fee, the court can give you a form to fill out to file it for free, and then you'll get a trial date in 3 weeks. And that's not just a hearing date to set another trial date. That is an actual trial date. Now, there are no lawyers allowed in small claims divisions, so although you won't have a lawyer, your employer won't have one either. And the only thing that could derail that would be if your employer showed up and wanted a lawyer, then the case would be moved from the small claims division to the regular division. Thank you so much for your question. We're here at the Virginia Office of Consumer Affairs, and we're speaking with Tina Holt, who is the supervisor of the Counseling, Intake, and Referral Unit, as well as Penny Jez, who is the Counseling and Consumer Education Coordinator of the Office of Consumer Affairs. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Marty.
First question, Penny, what type of calls and complaints does the Office of Consumer Affairs handle?
We handle complaints from consumers and calls for referrals from consumers regarding products, goods, or services they may have contracted for that they are dissatisfied with.
And are there types of calls and complaints that the Consumer Affairs Office does not handle?
Yes, there are a number of consumer complaints that the Consumer Affairs does not handle, and that's usually sorted out in the conversations our full-time telephone counselors have with the consumers. Primarily, we work on behalf of the consumer and not business for business. In addition to that, we do not get involved in any situations that require the courts.
So basically, if someone bought a good or a service in Virginia from a business and they're a private individual, that's the type of a call or complaint that you would be handling.
Yes, indeed.
What about housing matters? Do you get calls and complaints on housing matters? And if so, do you handle those as well?
Yes, we get general inquiries about landlord-tenant issues, foreclosures, home loans, any of the areas where a consumer may have a question. In fact, we probably get about 50,000 calls a year covering any possible topic you could imagine. Out of those calls, maybe only 10,000 fall under our jurisdiction. Part of our work is referral. This is the number you need to call. This is the agency that has jurisdiction over this area. Here, for example, is a group of state agencies that have jurisdiction over these wide range of industries. And we provide that number to them.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the Office of Consumer Affairs is getting roughly 50,000 calls per year. Could you tell us what are your top 10 complaints or calls that you're getting over the last year or so?
This past year, landlord-tenant, charities, government agency referrals, scams, and advertising. Auto sales, debt collection, lemon law, email solicitations, home improvement. Those are our top 10.
And has that list stayed fairly constant over the years, or do you find that it varies year by year?
It varies to some degree over year by year. This past year, credit and calls about credit and credit problems has emerged among the top five for the first time and stayed steady for the past 6 months or more. And this is directly linked, of course, to the economic situation that people are currently laboring with.
Now, when someone calls the Office of Consumer Affairs, the toll-free hotline that we'll give later on, who do they end up speaking with?
They end up speaking with one of our telephone counselors, and we have five telephone counselors online from 8:15 to 5 o'clock. We also have an after-hours call. We pride ourselves on answering the telephone with a live person, even though we have a taped lead-in where callers can select what office they need to speak with. They eventually get to us, and we're the people who sort out what their situation is and send them to the appropriate place or try to answer the situation ourselves. If it is something that we can handle, we will email or send a consumer complaint out to that person.
And roughly what percent of the time are you going to be emailing or sending out a consumer complaint to the person who called?
as often as possible. And we don't just send consumer complaints. For example, if the citizen has a problem that doesn't necessarily require a complaint, but we can give them a piece of paper with a set of steps that they might be able to follow. For example, identity theft, or what to do if you're going to need assistance with home foreclosure issues. We can send that material to them along with a referral number. We can't really say what percent of the time we give consumer complaints because every day it varies.
Let me turn the questioning to Tina Holt, who is the supervisor of the counseling intake and referral unit. Tina, could you tell us roughly how many consumer complaints, I guess written complaints or emailed complaints, does the Office of Consumer Affairs handle every year?
Well, out of the 50,000 phone calls that we receive through our hotline, roughly about 4,500 of those turn into valid written complaints that our office can handle.
And can you describe your investigation process? I assume that not every complaint that you get results in something that the Office of Consumer Affairs either can take action on or feels needs to have action taken on.
Correct. We start off with neutral case evaluation. And what happens is I, for one, review the written complaints that come in and see, number one, does it fall under our jurisdiction or if it needs to be referred to another local, state, or federal agency. Those that do, we refer them out to the appropriate agency. Those that do fall under the jurisdiction of the Office of Consumer Affairs are then farmed out to a dispute resolution specialist or an investigator if there's a alleged violation of the Consumer Protection Act or a violation of law that is regulated by our regulatory programs unit, such as charitable solicitations.
In reading the information from the Office of Consumer Affairs, it seems that there are a lot of different names for dispute resolution services that you all provide. There's something called conciliation, there's mediation, there's arbitration. Are there differences in those services, or are they pretty much the same thing?
There are some differences. With conciliation, and that's where the majority of our cases are handled. Somebody complains about an auto repair. So that dispute resolution specialist may contact that consumer to ask more detail about the situation, more questions. What does the consumer want? What resolution are they seeking? Then the dispute resolution specialist would contact the business and try to reach some type of mutually agreeable resolution if they can. So that's our form of conciliation, where both parties aren't in the same room, such as with mediation or arbitration. With mediation, you have both parties there. They're talking with a mediator and trying to reach that mutually agreed upon resolution. Both parties are able to do what we call storytelling and say what their side of the situation is. The only difference between the mediation and the arbitration, with mediation, both parties are encouraged to come up with their own resolution, where in arbitration, they're telling the sides of the stories to an arbitrator, and then the arbitrator makes that decision for them.
And I assume that the parties have to agree in advance to abide by the arbitrator's
decision.
Correct.
They're all voluntary processes.
Is there any cost to the participants when they use any of these Office of Consumer Affairs dispute resolution services?
No, we are a public agency that's all free of charge.
And where do people have to go in order to do an in-person mediation or arbitration?
We have local mediation centers around the state. We also use space in local courthouses, government buildings. We try to make it very convenient for the participants.
And who are these mediators or arbitrators? Are they independent people? Are they employed by the Office of Consumer Affairs?
We have certified mediators employed here at the Office of Consumer Affairs, but we also use a list of volunteer mediators, and they're all certified by the Supreme Court as mediators.
And they have to go through training in order to get
Correct.
That.
There is a certification process.
You mentioned that participation in the dispute resolution services is completely voluntary on the part, obviously, of both the complaining consumer and also the business against whom the complaint is made. Roughly, how often are the participants willing to engage in some sort of dispute resolution service?
Because it's voluntary, with mediation, we don't tackle a lot of mediations or arbitrations each year. The majority of the complaints are resolved through conciliation, and we have an 80% satisfaction rate for that. And because they're either low dollar or just the nature of the consumer transaction or just where the participants are located, it's easier for us to use the conciliation process as opposed to mediation and arbitration. Mediation and arbitration at times can be a little time consuming. You're asking people maybe to take off of work, to go somewhere, to sit down with a person to try to resolve their dispute, where it's easier for them and for all parties involved just to tackle the issue over the phone or through a series of emails and letters.
We mentioned on the calls for just advice and information, the Office of Consumer Affairs keeps a sort of top 10 list. Do you have a similar top 10 list for the formal written complaints?
We do. For last year, the top 10 were electronics, but mostly computer purchases, credit issues, debt collection, credit card, billing disputes, then auto repair, home improvement, auto sales, mail order, catalog purchases, furniture purchases, then issues with retail stores, mostly refund policy issues, then direct sales like door-to-door solicitations, and then the last is health spas. And health spas were listed because that is a regulated entity by our office, but also there were quite a number of health spa gym closures. So that significantly increased the number of complaints that were filed from consumers seeking refunds.
Does the Office of Consumer Affairs ever file civil lawsuits on behalf of consumers, or do you all refer cases to the proper authorities for criminal prosecution, either of those things?
We refer cases. We can be viewed as the investigative arm for the Office of the Attorney General. So if we see a pattern of behavior or alleged violations of the Consumer Protection Act, we can put a case together for prosecution for the Office of the Attorney General or local Commonwealth attorneys. But also, if we're unable to seek resolution for the consumer, we may suggest you may want to seek out the services of an attorney or go to small claims court.
In terms of pattern and practice, do you keep records of complaints against businesses? And if so, would those records be easily obtained by the public?
Yes, we do. We have a complaint database system, and if people call in through our hotline, they can ask, I'm thinking of doing business with ABC Auto Repair. How many complaints do you have? We can give them that information, let them know what the nature of the complaints are, how many were resolved favorably, and how many were not.
Which is a good segue to the last question, which is, how would someone contact the Office of Consumer Affairs, either for advice and information or to file a consumer complaint?
Anyone can call us, Marty, statewide through our toll-free hotline number, 1-800-552-9963. And if you're in the greater Richmond area, 804-786-2042. We are staffed with live telephone operators 8:15 a.m. to 5 p.m. during the weekdays. There is also an after-hours call number where you could leave your name and number, and someone will get back to you at the start of the next business day.
We have been speaking with Penny Jez, who is the Counseling and Consumer Education Coordinator of the Virginia Office of Consumer Affairs, as well as Tina Holt, who is the supervisor of the Counseling, Intake, and Referral Unit, also of the Office of Consumer Affairs. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us, Marty.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about the minimum wage. The first tip is that as of July 24, 2009, the state minimum wage is $7.25 per hour. The second tip is that tips may be credited towards the minimum wage, except you must be paid at least $2.13 per hour, regardless of any tips you receive.
If lodging and meals usually are furnished by your employer, the reasonable value of these items also can be credited towards the minimum wage. The third tip is that generally, time and a half must be paid for all hours over 40 hours in a week. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week's, that's our top three tips about the minimum wage.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The United States has the most comprehensive system of assistance for veterans of any nation in the world. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, Mark Matthews, adjunct professor of law and managing attorney of the Veterans Benefits Clinic at the William & Mary Law School, explains the many forms of assistance and veterans benefits available to those who have served our nation in the military. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Redbright.